Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:15 on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We have a panel, you know. It's the panel discussion in the first half of the show. And the panel today consists of Professor of Computer Science at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, Fran Berman.
Whoa.
Welcome back to the show.
Hi, everybody.
Nice to see you here. We also have political consultant Libby Post. Hello, Libby.
Hello, Ray.
How are you doing?
I'm fine.
It's hot out there.
It is.
Heat advisory, you know.
Yes. I keep getting these things on my phone.
Oh, the alerts?
The alerts.
They're scary, aren't they?
They are.
Well, they say
heat advisory from an ant. I'm like, oh my.
There you go. Well, Libby Post is here. We'll play it cool today. Speaking of cool, associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain is here. He's a nice chap, and just don't call him Mikey. Good morning.
Good morning, Ray.
I was just about to call him Mikey.
You see? Preemptive strike. And Alan Shartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Nice to have you all with us today. Now, you can join in the discussion if you're listening to the panel. Panel at WAMC.org is the email address. Panel at WAMC.org. One a day, if you can. Just make one good thought and send it our way. Keep the letters brief. Don't include links. No abbreviations. Proofread, for Pete's sake. Panel at WAMC.org. .org.
And if you've never written, we encourage you to write.
But if you have written, we discourage you from.
No, not exactly. But, you know, just watch it.
Exactly. One a day, if possible. Mm-hmm. One day after coming face-to-face in federal court with his longtime boss, Rick Gates returns to the witness stand today as the government's star witness in the financial fraud trial of President Trump's former campaign chairman. Gates was on the stand for hours. Yesterday, he acknowledged having embezzled hundreds of thousands of dollars from Paul Manafort and said the two had committed crimes together by stashing money in foreign bank accounts and falsifying bank loan documents. Gates expected to testify for another several hours today. Cross-examination coming. Defense lawyers will try to undercut his credibility and pin all the blame on him.
Well, you know, you think about this for a second. For all of us, the vast radio audience and me, all the guilt-ridden people in the world, you know, who spend hours and hours making sure that every jot and tittle that we have ever earned goes down on our income tax because we don't want the feds coming after us and arresting us and throwing us in the hoosegow. And now you read about these guys with their millions and stealing from each other and the accountants saying, yeah, I knew about it. The accountants, by the way, who are also given immunity from prosecution.
Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Well, they have to. Otherwise, why would they do it? And you say, oh, boy. And it's possible. We know Gates is going to go to jail. I think they're saying 5 years.
And I think Manafort's going to jail, too.
Well, he needs to be convicted first.
I know, but I think he'll be convicted.
Well, I'm not so sure.
Well, of course not, because I said he would be. So.
Now.
That's a perfunctory answer.
Right.
Well, I said so at 7:45 this morning.
Oh,
so,
did you?
So you know that it was only about you, although that didn't hurt. So the truth is that we know that it only takes one on a jury. That's all it takes. One person is sitting there, a deep state Trumper, who decides that they're not going to vote for conviction no matter what. And then it'll be that. With all the prep, all the millions that get spent on doing this. I would agree with you. I'm not happy about it, but I would agree with you that the chances are that he's going to get found guilty. But you know, better minds than mine think that this could not go well at some point.
I wonder if our tax dollars are being used by the special counsel's office to bring in the jury consultant types.
Yeah.
Who, you know,
research the voir dire guys,
right, yeah. To see and to do some research and to figure out if somebody's sweating too much and he's going to, he is a deep state person.
Well, it would be an appropriate step. I mean, everybody does it in major trials. Why shouldn't the prosecution do what the defense is absolutely doing?
Right.
And what's the appeal process for something like this?
What do you mean?
Where do they go next?
Well, it's a federal court, so there would be a federal circuit court of appeals.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The judge is interesting in this case. We spoke about him yesterday, U.S. District Judge T.S. Ellis III, not T.S. Eliot.
I'm not
T.S. Ellis.
J.F. Alfred
Then
Pufrock.
We'd expect to hear things about cats.
You should punch away.
So he told the prosecutors yesterday, hey, don't delve into the status and identities of the Eastern Europeans who made payments to Manafort. Ellis said all that's relevant is that Manafort was paid and whether he hid the income from the IRS. Quote, it doesn't matter whether these are good people, bad people, oligarchs, mafia. You don't need to throw mud at these people, said the judge.
I'm not a big fan of this judge, and I haven't been from the very beginning. It looks to me, I mean, I think I said it yesterday, but, this business of the government did exactly right. Said here, this guy has all this money. Mm-hmm. Al Capone, who the president has cited, had all that money. You That's find right. that he has the money, and then you say, okay, where was your income that justifies this level of expenditure, right? And if you can't tell, this is the issue. So the judge says, look, all you have to know is he's rich. How he got the money is irrelevant. All you have to know is what he does with it is irrelevant.
And that's not true either. Yeah.
Well, the prosecution has been portraying Manafort, was vilifying him for wearing expensive suits, et cetera, and an ostrich sport coat, things like that. And the judge has pointed out that, if you have the money, you can do whatever you want with it. There's nothing illegal about buying an ostrich sport coat.
A $15,000 ostrich jacket, which I think we all have.
Well, I have to check my closet.
Ray is wearing one now.
Yes, indeed. But I still don't understand his parents, the judge's parents. I mean, they had to know what they were doing when they named him T.S., don't you think?
It might be Thomas Samuel. And he decided, ooh, I'd rather be T.S. Yeah.
Well,
he could have made that.
I've been saying T.S. for years.
What I wonder about
B.S.
this, yes. Well, getting back to the issue.
The issue at hand?
Yes. I mean, they're spending a lot of time to talk about these bank accounts that are set up in Cyprus, where the Russian oligarchs can pass money to Manafort and essentially be free of any regulation by the United States government. It's a good way to launder money. And you have to wonder whether this is a prototype for what the special counsel might be building against the Trump people.
Yeah, yes.
The same kind of thing.
Yeah, but Mikey, one of...
no, what, Mike.
One of the things that is so interesting, about this is how they are now blaming... the defendants are now blaming the oligarchs and said they made us do it. They insisted if we're going to get paid, we had to get paid that way, and through these secret bank accounts and everything. He made me do it.
That's right.
Do they issue a W-9 or anything?
Right. I don't know if they have that.
I think that's the issue there, is the W-9. They want to avoid that.
Right.
They're talking about tax fraud, bank fraud, money laundering, lying in a disposition, lying to authorities. They're not talking about fashion sense. They're not talking about who your friends are. They should nail them on the stuff that they're holding them against.
Well, that's what the judge is saying, and that will hold... If there is an appeal, convicting them on the facts based on money laundering and tax evasion will stand a lot more of the test of appeal.
Yeah.
Right. So that could be. So in even though the prosecution is trying to throw anything against the wall that sticks, the judge seems to be narrowing that, and perhaps he's mindful of what will survive and appeal.
So that might actually be a positive, not a negative.
Alan, we've seen in New York State corruption trials the difficulty in finding someone who has admitted lying. In other words, the difficulty of a prosecution saying, well, this guy lied before, but now he's telling the truth.
Sure.
And so...
Are you lying now, sir?
The defense attorneys will be hammering him pretty well today, and it doesn't take much doubt for one juror to say, hey, listen, there's some question here.
Well, there has to be corroborating evidence for what Gates has said. Now, there was a sense that they weren't even going to call Gates, so something made him call him because they thought that they needed it. Now they're going to need somebody who says, yeah, I can tell you for a fact that what Gates is saying is true. He's not lying. And one of the reasons, by the way, that he had to allocute the way that he did in as soon as they put him on the stand was to avoid having anyone, say later he lied there. And by the way, one of the things that happens when you take the kind of plea this guy has taken, will you stop shuffling those papers? It's very distracting. as much.
Does it annoy you, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
Good, good, yeah. So, you know, you know, if he tells a lie or if he commits a crime while he's, you know, taking his copter's plea, he gets thrown into the can for a long time. And that's exactly what happened in the Prococo trial.
Right.
Yeah.
The email address here is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And I'm trying to find, I was shuffling my papers because I was trying to find this item in the news about some of the Ukrainian sources who funneled money in.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently one of them, and I got to find the quote here, was a signatory on one of these shell companies that Manafort had set up in Cyprus.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh.
And isn't it ultimately going to be Mueller's goal to try to, I know the judge said you can't throw mud at these people now, but isn't that what the ultimate goal of this is?
Well, I suspect there'll be forensic accountants from the FBI who will spell all this out and lay it all out for them. But are you saying that they're going after the Ukraine financiers, the ones that were employing Manafort?
Well, let's look at the end game.
As a political consultant?
This happened years ago, right?
Yes.
The fact that this is an issue in which Mueller is interested must tie in to some extent to the collusion or non-collusion issue, right? Am I wrong?
Well, no, we don't know yet, but you could well be right.
This could be a dry run for something that's coming.
Could be, but it's more likely that what this is okay, you've committed so many crimes, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. Now open up.
Right. This is about flipping.
Yeah. Yeah, flipping.
Yeah,
hamburgers.
It's about flipping.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Have we exhausted that one?
I'm exhausted.
Well, the first set of U.S. sanctions against Iran that had been eased under the landmark nuclear accord have gone back into effect. An executive order by President Trump reimposed the sanctions on financial transactions that involve U.S. dollars, Iran's automotive sector, the purchase of commercial planes and metals, including gold, the sanctions targeting the oil sector of Iran and central bank to be reimposed in early November. European allies not all that jazzed about the whole thing. They say they deeply regret the U.S. action. And we'll take a minute here to get Mike Spain's thoughts, and then we'll take a break and we'll pick it up there.
Yeah, well, I thought that when the Iran agreement was made, there was talk of them buying many Boeing airplanes from Boeing to be made in the United States. And there's probably a lot of other United States companies that would have benefited from this. So this could backfire on Trump also. But it's really, it already has made the currency in Iran, just the threat of these sanctions and the fact that the president is pledging to impose them, it's making their currency sink. It's down half its value in the last couple of months.
Yeah, they're in real trouble.
It is. And you know, we're undermining Rouhani, the president in Iran, and it's only going to lead to his downfall, and probably a more right-wing guy is going to get in there. Not that he's not right-wing, but it's
and just not that the head Ayatollah doesn't run the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, I know. But it making Iran unstable, is that really a good idea?
No, it's not, because it just will lead to more restrictive politics. It'll lead to the Ayatollahs actually being totally in charge. They right now have a sort of a sham of a president. If Iran becomes totally unhinged and unstable, the Ayatollahs will become president, and that will be the end of any kind of forward progress that we had going on in Iran. I mean, the people were not happy, and I think that we were getting somewhere in. I wouldn't say liberalizing the society, but at least giving people the ability to speak out and be able to have businesses. I mean, the business community was doing better in Iran. And
they wanted Western fast food franchises.
Right, they were more of a player.
You make a point.
All right. Now, I have...
But I have some issues.
I know, and I bet you disagree with Libby about some things. But
well,
hang on,
some
we're
questions.
Out of time. We have to break for the BBC News. But
Brits.
I promise you, your chance is coming up. It's the Roundtable, Fran Berman, Libby Post, Mike Spain, and Alan Shartok. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on a Tuesday morning. It is the Roundtable panel, and 9:34 is the time. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. The panel today is a good one. Libby Post is here, Mike Spain, Fran Berman, and Alan Shartok. You, of course, at panel@wamc.org. Where we left the program, we were talking about the Iran sanctions, the first set of U.S. sanctions back in effect today, and the sanctions against the oil sector of Iran and the central bank scheduled to be reimposed in November. European Union foreign policy chief says the EU is encouraging enterprises to increase their business with Iran as that country has been compliant with their nuclear-related commitments. And so the president, I believe, said this. Here's what he said, rattling papers. President says stiff U.S. sanctions against Iran are back in effect, and anyone doing business with Iran will not be doing business with the United States.
That's a shot at the European Union, of course.
Yep. And he added in an early morning tweet that he is asking for world peace, nothing less.
Right. That's world peace Donald Trump style.
Right. This is what
he's into. So the IAEA, in their last 11 reports, says that Iran is compliant. And, you know, it seems to me that this really kicks the can down this road of increasing isolationism with respect to Europe, increasing bad relationships with them. The New York Times said that, you know, this is the coalition of the unwilling. And it really is true. I mean, asking these European companies to make a decision between the U.S. and Iran just incredibly weakens the relationship.
And strengthens
and without reason.
And strengthens Putin's hand of disruption.
Yeah.
Right. And China has already said that they're not intending to honor the oil boycott of Iran, and they'll just step in and buy tons and tons of barrels and barrels, I guess, of oil, and they'll cement their relationship with Iran. And, you know, isolation, that's exactly right, Fran. Yeah. I agree. But we're just becoming more isolated.
And by the way, if you're a fan of pistachios, those are going
to
be...
Yeah. I was thinking about what more scared, what was going to happen to those great elephant pistachio commercials.
Yeah, forget about that.
But all of this plays right into Putin's hand. He wants to destabilize the West. He knows that destabilizing the Middle East will play into that. And we have a puppet.
And, of course, let's remember that we are very upset about the non-democratic nature of Iran. This is sarcastic, folks. But over not that far away in their enemy, Saudi Arabia, they're still caning people 50 times for speaking out against the government. And when we object to that in the slightest terms, you know, I mean, it is disgusting to say this, what this double standard is. On the other hand, I don't want to give the Iranians any award for being great players, in the Middle East.
No, but I think the Iranian agreement, the nuclear agreement, helped stabilize Iran. It helped stabilize the government, stabilize the economy. And if we want them to be a world player that plays nice in the sandbox, that's what we need to do.
That's exactly right. If we left the agreement in place, or left our portion of the agreement in place, we'd be engaged with Iran. They would be engaged with the Western world, less influenced by Russia, and frankly, less influenced by the Ayatollahs as they become more aware of what's going on in the world. And now we're just... You know, they're shutting down their internet again. They're becoming more isolated. There's internal turmoil, and you know that may be something that looks good from the outside. Oh, good, they're our enemy and they're having trouble. But really, why do we want that? We want them to become stable and engage, and that's where I think it's going south.
Yeah, I agree.
The Iranians, of course, are troublemakers. Mm-hmm. We know that internationally. We know that the economy, instead of being strengthened, has basically been weakened right now. And the dollar, you know, the Iranian equivalent of the dollar keeps going down and down. People are in the streets right now. And so why would we want to make it worse is my issue. In other words, it's going our way right now, at least if we consider ourselves to be aware that the Ayatollahs are not exactly good sportsmen.
It was going our way.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
The email address here on the panel is panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and a stack of letters here.
All right. Nicole writes, hooray for Ray.
Aha. Is that my wife?
No, this is not.
Different Nicole.
No, it's a different Nicole.
Okay, fair enough.
And good morning, panel. I listen daily, and I love the show. I especially love the dynamic between Ray and Alan. So far, so good. Now the letter goes into bad territory.
Uh-oh.
Thank you, Ray, for the much-needed belly laugh this morning around paper shuffling and keeping Alan on his toes.
You see?
Keep up the great work.
You see?
Don't you see? All right.
All right. There are recycle bins behind you, sir.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
There you are.
Okay. Mafforth's wealth, says Bob, regular letter writer Bob. I don't have a problem with the judge's refusal to let the prosecution tarnish Manafort's already slimy image with examples of how he spent his money. It's not something us liberals would accept if the Bruno Magli was on the other foot and prosecutors were tearing into Hillary for buying a $15,000 Kate Spade pocketbook. And that's from Bob. And by the way, if anybody wants to.
Well, I mean, what you do with your money is not, if you spend it illegally, it may portray something about your personality, but it's not against the law.
Yeah.
But I have to say that it seems like just desserts because they're always talking about what women are wearing, but they're never mm-hmm. talking about what men
That's
are wearing.
Right.
So it's kind of entertaining to hear about the ostrich sports jacket.
But why is that? I mean, I'm fascinated by that. I've always been fascinated about that. Why is it that, you know, all the ads you read, you know, the Financial Times and how they're spending it and all the rest of it, it's all about women. Why is there no men's fashion? Is that because people have always seen women as a channel?
There's men's fashion,
right.
But I think a relevant attribute of women is their beauty or what they wear, and I think a irrelevant attribute of men is their handsomeness or what they wear.
As a side
for
question,
for men it's about power, and for women it's about beauty.
Doesn't an ostrich jacket?
No, I think
itch?
It's also about
doesn't
power.
It make you itch?
I wonder that
it's
too,
got
Ray.
Silk lining.
Oh, it does. Okay.
But getting back to Alan's lead up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which you agreed with because you were nodding.
That's right. Women
so
have been objectified
yes, right.
for centuries.
Exactly.
And it's all about beauty and how they look.
Right.
And men, it's all about how they think.
Men
is all about how they think and their accomplishments.
What?
Okay, Mike.
Why are we even talking about Hillary Clinton in this thing and her bags? It's irrelevant.
That's the old
what about this? You know,
right.
Every time somebody gets defensive who's sort of supportive of Trump or any of the minions around him, they say, what about Hillary Clinton? What about the Clinton Foundation? What about her emails? It's irrelevant. She lost the election. She's far away from
I'm
all
sorry,
this.
I'm sorry, Mike. I'm having a great difficulty, despite my respect for you, for understanding what the hell you're talking about. I don't get it.
The writer comes in and you know, this is Manafort's on trial. They're talking about his opulent lifestyle to demonstrate that he obviously is wealthier than his tax returns might suggest.
Correct. So far, so good.
And they want to write in about Hillary's $15,000 Kate Spade bag. What it has nothing to do with.
No, Hillary's just an example for.
Yeah. That was a hypothetical.
For this, yeah.
Well,
I think.
But it is a tactic. Every time, you know, all you got to do is watch Fox News for about 25 seconds. And as soon as anybody starts criticizing Trump, they say, what about when Hillary did this? What about when Hillary did that? Just drop it.
Wow. You know, I've never seen you so angry.
Oh, I'm angry, Ray. I'm angry.
But it does raise an interesting question as to what people were trying, what the opponents were trying to do to Hillary. I mean, you know, there was misogyny. There's no question about it. But it was also something else. It was some kind of gender thing there, don't you think?
Well, that is misogyny, Alan.
Yeah.
The gender
well,
thing.
Well, I don't only know, but that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. It's not only the traditional misogyny. It's a different kind of anger at Hillary for being maybe
competent.
Yeah, and maybe in the traditional terms, maybe more manlike. You know what I'm saying?
That's misogyny, Alan. That's what misogyny
is. I think that's right. I think there's a much narrower lens allowed for women in public life than there is for men.
Right.
Much narrower. You can be a jerk and you can be a man of public life, and people will be much more tolerant of that.
That's right. That's true.
I'm continuing to read.
It's a double standard.
Without any question, hold your letters.
Okay.
Gates says, Pete, good morning, panel. Worth it to have Gates suffer the attack from defense attorneys. Gates willing to testify forces the question of will Manafort testify, and if not, why not? A prosecution would love getting Manafort on the stand. And if Manafort does not get out there, like Gates, he will look like a coward, and Gates will gain credibility. Well, no, that's a
leap.
It's a difficult lawyer question. Nobody likes to put their people on the stand, especially if they're guilty.
It backfired on Dean Skelos, the former leader of the state Senate, who was on trial. He testified at length about how he was trying to just help his son when he was pressuring contractors to hire the son for seldom show jobs. And he was just, you know, talked about his relationship with his son and tried to look personable. And, man, it didn't help at all. The outcome
he wanted to be seen as
favorable.
A father.
Right, but it wasn't a favorable outcome. I mean, you would become vulnerable to cross-examination.
Sure. Yes.
And that is where the prosecution has quite an advantage over you.
Well, let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get back to more of your exciting letters. The email address is panel@wamc.org. Mike Spain, Fran Berman, Libby Post, and Alan Chartok are here on the panel. Ray is in for Joe. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Roundtable on WAMC. 9:46. It's a Tuesday morning. Going to be a hot one today. Heat advisory.
It already is.
So play it cool, Daddy-O. You drink some of that lemonade and sit by the air conditioner if you have one. Or, you know, put ice in your pants. Whatever works for you.
I have ice in my pants right now. Want to see?
No. Oh. We really don't. The email address is panel@wamc.org. And the man with ice in his pants will continue reading letters.
All right. Okay, so Peter says, Pete, good morning, panel. Worth it to have Gates suffer the attack from defense attorneys. Gates willing to testify forces the question, will Manafort testify? And if not, why not? Didn't we do this one? I think maybe
that's one thing we discussed when Mike was on his rant.
Yeah. Prosecution would love getting Manafort on the stand, and if Manafort does not get out there like Gates, he will look like a coward, and Gates will gain credibility.
All right, maybe we did read that one.
That's what
Put
I thought.
Put it in the recycle bin.
In the recycle bin.
Next.
Ben says, Manafort, do you need 100% of the jurors for conviction? You betcha bippy you do.
Wow.
You've dated yourself right there.
Yes,
right.
Indeed.
What's that from?
How's your
laughing.
Bird? Yeah, that's it's laughing, right?
Yeah, that's the point.
I wanted Alan to answer to see if he really knew.
Mike says...
Yeah, me too.
Mike says, first-time mailer. Dear panel, can we open our eyes to some reality? This whole thing makes no sense. Trump lost the popular vote by over 1 million people. Parenthesis, that's a lot.
I think it was 3 million.
We need to talk more about abolishing the Electoral College. It's 2018, and that's from Mike in Schenectady.
He makes a good point.
Well, these Republicans are certainly going to be the first ones to change college.
It's not going to happen. But there is a compact that I think something like in the 20s states are signing on to it where break up their electoral votes based on the percentage that each candidate gets. And had that happened in 2016 and probably in a lot of other years, it might have been a different outcome.
And there's real hope that something like that will work because abolishment is just
right.
Know,
that's exactly right. I agree, Fran. I don't think that we're ready to throw it out, but this would modify it in a way that would be more representative of how people voted.
Right.
And remember the Great Compromise. I mean, the whole point was that the little states wanted a little extra clout.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I interview people from on the congressional corner from Rhode Island or from Vermont, we're talking about one congressman for the entire state. One. It's astounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. And this is good from Judy in Northampton. Very good. The latest scandal. At last we got it. Gatesgate.
Gatesgate.
Nice. Gatesgate.
There you
I
are.
Like it.
Yes.
That's my kind of person.
Nice, Judy.
Oh, yeah, right. And Kevin says, Trump Jr., he lied to Congress about Trump Tower meeting. Was that under oath? I wonder if Mueller questioned him, and if so, what kind of jail time he's looking at. We do know that the president has let it be known that he is concerned about Donald Jr.'s potential risk here. I'm not sure what he actually said to Congress in his testimony. I'm not so sure that he didn't tell, that he didn't obfuscate to the point where he didn't lie about that meeting to Congress. Maybe I'm wrong, but there have been a lot of different reports on that one. So thank you, Kevin. And then Paul says, "Fool! Good morning. Last year I contributed," and then it has how much money, but that's been crossed out.
Okay.
"To WMC. Last Friday at 9:45 hours, a member of the panel called me a fool for voting for President Trump." Anybody remember that?
I wasn't here, so I could say it wasn't
you. Know, I've been here every day, and that didn't
I wasn't happen. Here Friday, but I will say that when the people who are opposed to Trump call the people that voted for Trump names, call them fools, call them whatever, yes. I think that that means that they have their ears closed and their eyes closed. They're not looking at why people turned to Trump and all the many, many, many reasons why they supported Trump. And when they begin to understand those, that's when they might begin to make some traction in the next election.
Yeah, kudos to anyone who voted at all. I mean, that's the point. Everybody should be voting,
you're
no matter
exactly
who
right
you vote for.
"No one on the panel supported my First Amendment right to vote for whom I wish. What a shame." Well, you've gotten it today, Paul. And I must say, I'm here every day, and I don't remember anybody calling anybody a fool for having voted for Trump.
Now, people have been called fools on this program.
Oh,
probably
heck,
not
yes.
for that.
Heck yes.
Right. Especially when they crumple paper.
All right, Ramon.
You know, I'm sorry, Francine. I apologize. excuse me, sir.
Well, Ramon,
go right ahead.
Ramon, who writes letters a lot and who we very much respect, said, "Den of corruption that D.C. may be, the biggest shame is that Mueller cannot deputize and widen the investigation of corruption, fraud, money laundering, and tax evasion on the rests of all elected officials and aides in D.C. I hope all these crooks are caught and have to do time for their corruption. But that would likely leave D.C. a ghost town." Well,
yeah, there's a.
I suppose there are some good politicians. But the longer I'm around, the more I'm resentful of the iron law of oligarchy and the way that it works. For example, in the New York State Legislature, which is, you know, I watch a lot, the people I know in the legislature, good people, are always saying, "Hey, I didn't do that. The leader did that." Hey, person, you voted for the leader and you made the leader what it is. And if in fact there were enough people who really objected to that. But what happens is, as my dad used to say to me, quote, "You go fight." So in other words, you go carry my water for me. And I think that exists in the Congress as much as in, I think Ramon makes a point, because those folks have to be held responsible. But some things do get done. For example, in the Congress, as you all know, you may not earn outside income. But in the state legislature, you can just bring it on and earn all you want. Now, obviously, Congress must have been feeling such heat that they went and passed this rule, which is a very good one. The state legislature knows such thing. They're not going to do it, and they're going to let their leaders carry the weight.
Our email address here is panel@wamc.org. I think those may not have been read, but not sure.
No, these have not been read.
Then let's do that.
Okay. Iran says, Ilya, well, here's how he spells it, and he writes a lot. E-L-I, capital A-S. Ilyas? I don't know.
Elias?
Elias.
Well, Elias is what you'd think, except for that capital A.
Oh, never mind.
Okay. So, Iran. The hardliners in Iran despise the nuclear deal. They fought against it, but were overruled because of economic impact. These extremists are happy to see Trump's efforts, which may result in the defeat of their enemy, the moderate Rouhani, who is Iran's greatest hope for reform. I've read a lot about Rouhani, which is not that flattering. And say, you know, he is just sort of Pepsi Light. So who knows?
Pepsi Light.
In other words, he's Ayatollah Light as opposed to.
Oh. Yeah.
You get it now, Mike?
I do now.
Less filling than the full Ayatollah.
Mm. Yeah. And by the way, there are those people who would argue that those drinks with aspartame and other things like them are not good for you.
Yes, one leg is going to become shorter than the other eventually.
Really? What'd
you say?
Yeah. One leg will become shorter than the other.
Tell computer scientists they can't drink Diet Coke.
But we digress.
Right, you never get any work done, right?
Yes, we do.
We really digress a lot.
Do we?
There's letters and stuff.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right, James has a question about trade. I have heard many times the U.S. can weather these trade conflicts, that we are the strongest nation, yada, yada. But can we? If we lose trade with China, Mexico, Canada, and EU, our major trading partners, could we survive all that? We may weather them individually, but collectively, your thoughts?
Are we talking about the Saudi Arabia, Canadian thing?
I think what he's saying is Trump is picking fights with so many countries,
right,
and imposing tariffs and everything else, that in fact, it's got to catch up with you. I think that's the point.
Absolutely. I think Fran brought it up a little while ago. We're heading into isolation. We're cutting ourselves off from our allies and our foes. And you know, we'll stay in good graces, I guess, with Saudi Arabia because Trump really likes
and Russia.
That. Welcome that.
Well, and
Russia.
And
North
Korea. But the interesting thing is, you know, it seems like a lot of people are kind of waiting it out now, assuming that it will change. But, you know, once we move from waiting it out to thinking this is the way the U.S. is, then it gets even worse.
Well, and to that point, even if our allies are waiting it out because they are taking the long view, saying that, you know, things change in the U.S., they change every 4 to 8 years, and we'll just sort of hang out, there's damage that's going to be very difficult to recover from. We've insulted and hurt agreements we've had with a lot of our allies, and it's going to be difficult to win all that back and that trust that we had going into this back.
And Mary writes,
I completely agree.
Mary writes, Russian interference. If recent speculation in the media is true that Russia advised the 2016 Trump campaign to focus on states that would give Trump the Electoral College majority, then it's obvious that the Russians understand our election process better than most U.S. citizens. To quote a notorious American, sad.
Well, that's pretty standard political strategy, though. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's their experts who've studied it. They probably came here and studied it in our universities.
I would think anybody running for office would go for something like that.
This isn't the average American versus an average Russian. It's the Russian elite, the Russian Secret Service equivalent, or CIA equivalent.
The KGB.
KGB.
What I'm saying is, would any presidential campaign need that advice?
Oh, no. I think they could do it on their own.
Yeah, well, you know, this brings me to a memory that has hopped into my head.
We have 30 seconds.
Well, there was when I worked for Congressman Thompson back as an intern, years and years and years ago, he introduced me to a Russian who was just hanging around the office.
Just hanging around. And that was in the days of the Soviet Union.
Right.
Yeah, that's Soviet Union time. Yeah. You know, Khrushchev and his shoe.
That's nice. We'll pause for news here. We have RPI's Fran Berman here.
She's terrific, by the way.
Indeed.
She is wonderful.
Political consultant, equally terrific, Libby Post.
She's great.
Mike Spain of the Times Union, also terrific. And Alan Chartok.
Mikey.
Who's just out of this world.
Also terrific.
Terrific. Let's take a break. Welcome back to the Roundtable on Tuesday morning, 6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Ray in for Joe. It's the panel, and we continue till about 25 after with Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post, and Fran Berman. Major tech companies have begun to ban right-wing conspiracy theorist Alex Jones from their services, reflecting a more aggressive enforcement of policies against hate speech following protests on social media. Facebook took down 4 pages belonging to Jones, including 2 featuring his InfoWars show, for violating its hate speech and bullying policies over the past several days. Apple, YouTube, and Spotify have also removed material published by Jones. Twitter, which has not banned Jones, has also faced similar calls. Now, those not familiar with Alex Jones, he is conspiracy theorist. Terror attacks such as 9/11 were actually carried out by the government. The Sandy Hook Elementary mass shooting was a hoax. Several other things such as that. These actions are in direct contrast to something Facebook said as recently as July 12th, when it tweeted, it sees pages on both the left and right pumping out what they consider opinion or analysis, but others call fake news. And they wrote, in response to a question from CNN reporter Oliver Darcy, we believe banning these pages would be contrary to the basic principles of free speech. And yesterday, they banned him.
Okay, so my first feeling about this is good. He's a rotten person. No, there's no two ways about it. But this gives him visibility that a lot of people who... No,
that's a microphone. The engineer said move it a little closer. Continue.
Okay, that a lot of people thought... you know, he didn't know him. A lot of people didn't know who this guy was. So you do this, he's got to be dancing around saying, this is wonderful for me. Don't you think?
This is really, really challenging stuff because free speech and hate speech are different. So free speech is protected by our Constitution. It means you can basically say, in many circumstances, anything you want, whether it's hurtful, whether it's, you know, provocative or not. But these companies who are not part of the U.S. government, they're private institutions, they have policies. Like, you go to a restaurant, it says no shoes, no shirts, no service. These guys are saying no hate speech, no service. And so YouTube, which is owned by Google, and Facebook and Apple... have a policy about hate speech and decided this guy was in violation in it and kicked them off. And I've been thinking about this a lot because I just think this is really a fascinating area. When is it the government's job to step in? You know, right now we're seeing a lot of the tech companies kind of take this on themselves as part of their policy. And this point of view is going to really prevail.
Why are they taking it on?
I beg your pardon?
In other words, why are they taking it on?
Well, I mean, they're taking it on because they are, you know,
good, solid Americans.
They're trying to be a neutral platform for communication and dissemination.
Because the hurt would be greater.
It's hard to be neutral in this instance.
The hurt would be greater if they didn't take it.
Are they simply a platform, or are they now becoming media companies when they're starting to control what they're allowing onto their platform?
And that's the really murky stuff. And I know a lot of people who work in those exact same tech companies and more. And it's challenging for them. I mean, look at what recently happened with Google, where people who worked for Google did not want to work on a Pentagon contract around artificial intelligence and drones and face recognition. I mean, people's politics do come to play. It comes to play for the people who work for these companies. It comes to play for these companies. It comes to play for their users who don't want to use that platform if they feel like there's a lot of free speech. And, you know, in the digital age where these things are very powerful tools, I think we're really struggling with,
now,
you know, where we should be.
Now, what about the great university where you work, RPI?
Yep.
Is political dissent an absolute right?
Well, I think universities in general are really having trouble with it. I was reading a variety of things about who you let on campus. And Berkeley and Williams College and, you know, a variety of universities have dealt with, can you bring a hate monger on campus under free speech?
But it's a slippery slope, right?
We're being really challenged by, you know, what is free speech? Yeah. And when is hate speech so provocative that we actually want to restrict free speech?
So in the 1950s, if you were a communist, that was hate speech.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people suffered. People went to jail, you know, as a result of that. We had Norman Thomas invited to Hunter, and there was hell to pay. Now half the schools in New York City are named after Norman, after Norman Thomas. So it is a slippery slope.
A very slippery slope.
Yeah.
And it's hard to know. And the U.S., you know, there's one point of view, which is you minimally regulate, and that's kind of where we are. Beyond free speech. But, you know, there are countries that regulate much more thoroughly.
Well, the European Union has been in a constant, you know, struggle with Google over and Facebook over privacy issues.
You bet.
And people have the right in the European Union to request that things be taken down from Google, and they have to reply and respond. And then just recently, Google has come up with a a search engine that will remove any searches or ignore any searches that in China, it'll be used in China, and it'll and the Chinese government basically will be able to say you can't search for this, you can't search for that, and it will just ignore when you put those search terms in. So they're accommodating all around the world as a business that wants to be a platform, but they also are trying to prevent government regulation in the U.S. I don't know how real that risk is, or worse, seeing what Facebook went through just a couple weeks ago when their stock took a dive. People are jumping off Facebook right and left. They're sick of the platform, and they are angry about what happened during elections and how. I just heard the other day in Egypt during the during one of the left wing uprisings, Tahrir Square, they said if you normally look at Facebook and you're conservative and you put that in, you'd get information about the Muslim Brotherhood. If you're liberal, you'd get stuff about Tahrir Square. But if you put in, you just search for Egypt, when you put in Egypt, you'll get ads for travel on the Nile.
Right.
I mean, you know, they're manipulating us and feeding us.
There's so much data about us that they're customizing things for you, but you may not want things customized for you.
Yeah.
You know, for me, this the right to be forgotten that you just talked about, which is part of the general data protection regulation in Europe, they have a really different stand on data privacy, which is it is more important to them that European citizens can control the data about them than it is that companies are happy.
For different cultures.
Yeah. In the U.S., I think the U.S. is shirking its job. We don't have a stand on data privacy. We don't have any regulation around data privacy, and we're getting manipulated, and we're getting stuff customized to us, and we're the
products.
But
how do you do that? Do you do it with a law? I mean,
I strongly believe we need a law. It may not be the GDPR. It depends on what the U.S. wants to do and the stand we want to take, but we have no laws around it generally.
So not just Google and Facebook.
And let me be clear about that. We have child online protection law. We have HIPAA. We have Fair Credit. All of those protect your data.
Say there was an unfavorable story for you on a website.
Yep.
Do you have the right to make them take it down, do you think?
Well, define unfavorable. It's just something I don't like.
It was about you were thrown out of school after putting a stink bomb in the cafeteria.
How did you know?
I saw that. I Googled it, friend. No, but I mean, so that's there. It's true. You might have been thrown out of school and charged with disorderly conduct because you put a stink bomb in the cafeteria. Should you be able to? You know, should the law compel you to?
Generally in this country, no.
No. It's a difficult thing. I mean, you don't want to start
It's not clear that that suits the criteria in Europe either, though. You know, I mean, it has to be something that is more dramatic, more specific. But, you know, the General Data Protection Regulation, it's, you know, tens of pages. It's like 100 pages. And for us, we have nothing near that kind of specificity.
Right? I mean, GDPR?
Yes.
Yeah. So I think everyone is watching it closely in the U.S. to see how it does affect things and may define what happens here.
Well, it affects our multinational companies for sure.
Sure,
because they have to operate in
Google,
Europe.
Apple, Facebook.
Well, but, you know, let's for a moment just look at Alex Jones and what he has promulgated and what he has said, and you know the heartache that he mounted upon the Newtown families, saying that it never happened, that it was all crisis actors. You know, this is a man that has gone on the air and said go out and kill transgender people and Muslims. I mean, this is the kind of...
This is also somebody who has been congratulated publicly by our president.
That's right.
And says he's a good friend
and
basically endorsed.
Right, you know? He's a conspiracy theorist peddler, snake oil salesman, and undermining our democracy. It's just that simple.
I agree. In my opinion, in my personal opinion, he's about as awful as you could get.
It's the roundtable panel, and we have Fran Berman and Libby Post, Mike Spain, Alan Shartok. A few minutes left here, Alan, for a couple of listener emails, and then we'll wrap it up for the day.
Okay. Lexa says, I listen less frequently now as I'm working out of the area, but I tuned in this morning, although I didn't hear anyone disparage anyone who wrote in. Alan did flippantly refer to Iranians as troublemakers, which is sloppy, if not explicitly racist. I urge the panel to be mindful of the impact of your words. I would also love to see more ethnic diversity represented on the panel once more, and that's Alexandria of Chatham. Okay, and Chris says, Muddle East. I wonder why no journalists have asked Trump if he considers Bush and Cheney war criminals for the Iraq war. And we heard from Scott, who said, hello, esteemed panel. I'm wondering what happens when Mueller tries to subpoena Trump and Trump refuses. It seems Giuliani has been trying to get out in front of this most likely possibility by speculating that the president is beyond reproach. This seems like their endgame move to say, come and get me. There's more in this letter, and I'm not going to read it all, but obviously it's going to get to the Supreme Court. And
which justices will decide it?
That's right. Okay, and Erica says, does anyone on the panel think Trump may be forced to resign by the end of the year? So hoping things begin to unravel quickly from here on out. And that's Erica in Conway, Massachusetts.
It has to do with what happens in November.
Rocco says, ice in your pants? Alan, if you have ice in your pants, how do you keep from getting electrocuted when you touch the mic or any other electrical device in the studio? We need some humor in dire times.
Yes.
Take care.
Rock well, Alan is never here. Grounded, so he doesn't.
I see. Yeah, that was a joke.
Yeah, it was.
Okay,
that's
now,
a good one.
Okay, now. Comment. The ongoing use by the Fox crowd of Hillary reminds me of what I have done with old high-mileage cars. Keep running them until they completely break down and I can't run them anymore, even then blaming them for any continuing financial misery. And that's from Tom in Catskill. And Margie says, Libby's words are excellent in capital words, but let's face it, men's clothing is kind of boring.
I don't think every man's clothing is kind of boring. Paul Manafort had an ostrich jacket.
Hell yeah.
You should see what these guys are wearing here. You'd really be impressed.
Yeah, very impressive.
Yeah, I wonder if he's in training to be a drag queen, but that's a whole other story for another day.
Men's clothing is kind of boring. The options aside from the material, include the width of the lapels and the ties and the color of the cloth.
Oh, this is an Italian tie. This is Valentino. This is nice stuff right here.
Is that the one that Jeannie...
That's another one from the Jeannie Hunter collection.
Jeannie
Hunter.
My friend Jeannie Hunter. She's a great fan of Ray Graff.
Oh, we love Jeannie Hunter.
And she was on board for years. Now she's down to Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, and CM says, what about ism? Morning panel, given the state of Trump-Russia as it relates to Fox News attacks on Hillary, it helps to look at the definition of whataboutism, and then they go into the definition.
Okay. All right, sir.
More?
Yeah. Why not?
Okay.
We got time.
Dean says, while folks on the right may object, social media platforms banning Alex Jones are enhancing public safety. That's from Dean. And Christopher says, Alex Jones runs intimidation campaigns incorporating bad faith, scurrilous, out-and-out lies. Should false advertising and harassment be protected speech, promoted speech? Well, that's an interesting question, considering the fact that our president lies and lies and lies and lies.
Right.
Is that okay? And Omitola says, comment on hate speech. As you discuss how certain groups can practice hate speech, consider how white hate groups who have committed violence, Oklahoma City bombings, have never been routed out like the Muslim hate group. Who gets arrested for what they might say? My point is to arrest those white supremacists instead of always protecting them.
All right. Well, we thank you for your emails today. And in the couple of minutes we have left, we turn to Mike Spain from the Times Union. Mike, what's new in the TU?
A pretty interesting story about the bishop of the Albany Roman Catholic Diocese, Edward Scharfenberger. Our story today by Rob Brill comes after these allegations that we've heard a lot about recently involving the prominent Roman Catholic cleric, Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. He had been accused of sexually abusing minors and adult seminarians for decades, and this all came out recently. And a few weeks ago, the Pope Francis, removed McCarrick from the ministry and ordered him to spend the rest of his life in prayer and penance in seclusion. Now, Albany's Bishop Scharfenberger says a commission of Catholic lay people is needed to investigate his brother bishops. He's essentially saying that rather than investigate themselves, and that's really what the church in the United States has done since the priest abuse scandal erupted around the year 2002, they've been self-policing, and in what the bishop in Albany is suggesting, and it's a pretty interesting suggestion, is that they get Catholic faithful lay people, not clerics, to investigate the bishops and the priests. And I'm sure there'll be a lot of reaction to that. It's kind of an amazing suggestion. And Scharfenberger, who became the bishop in Albany in 2014. It's Albany's 10th bishop. He's a canon lawyer. That means he's a lawyer within the church, but he's also a graduate of Fordham Law School and is a member of the New York State Bar Association. And when he was in Brooklyn, before he came to Albany, he was on the diocese panel that reviewed cases of sexual abuse against minors. So he's pretty well versed on the law and church law and on this issue. So we're kind of very interested to see what the reaction will be around the country.
What do
so
you think?
So he's a lay lawyer as well?
Yeah, he's a member of the New York State Bar, right? He's a he
so in other words, when you go to confessional, it's a billable hour.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, it is. You can just put it right in the collection plate, right?
How about that?
What do you think, Mike, about this?
I think it's very interesting because I think people on the right, you know, conservatives in the church will be praising this, and I think people on the left, you know, the liberals in the church will be praising it. It's a way of empowering the people in the pews, so to speak, and there'll be a lot of people, maybe not priests and probably not bishops and cardinals, but a lot of lay people will say Bishop Scharfenberger has a very good idea here, and perhaps if they had done this early on, the accountability would have been there. That a lot of people are still offended by the scandal of priest abuse and how priests were allowed to get away with it for years, and This could be a good way to restore faith and trust in what happens.
But can you also see what the problems with this could be, which is who's going to appoint the lay panel and whether this becomes a buffer?
All right, we have about a minute here. That's in today's Times Union, Mike?
It is.
All right, well, thank you, Mike Spain from the Times Union, for being here. Thank you to Libby Post, and we appreciate your assistance today. And thanks to RPI's Fran Berman for being here. And Alan, you as well. It was fun. Thank you.
Yeah, you keep on shuffling those papers, right?
You know, they're terrific. Well, some people bring in electronic devices. There's no shuffling, but you hear the clicking. I like the shuffling.
Have a good day, everyone.
All right. Good night. Now. Well, there's much more roundtable ahead. Don't touch that dial.